Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today is Bhishmashtami, the anniversary of the disappearance of this world from of Bhishma Dev, one of the Dwadasha Mahajana, 12 great personalities who are mentioned by Yamaraj in Srimad Bhagavatam, including himself, as authorities in the matter of devotional service. Of course, there are many more great personalities, but specifically these 12 are noted and often quoted. We have in our Gaurya Vaishnav calendar, it's mentioned Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, when he compiled this, he included Bhishmashtami, and thus it comes in our ISKCON calendar. We don't generally give that much attention to it. It first really came to my attention, must have been around 1990, 1991, when I was in Kakinada, Andhra Pradesh. I'd been there for about a month, and I was doing programs, and I was scheduled to leave, and I didn't even note that it was just before Bhishmashtami, but some of the gentlemen who I'd become acquainted with, they expressed disappointment that I was leaving shortly before Bhishmashtami. They thought, oh, we thought you'd be here with us for Bhishmashtami. They were quite aware of that, and they expected me to be there and have some discussion and some celebration. For me, Bhishma has become very much part of my life, in as much as I am giving a series of talks on Vishnu Sahasranama, which is spoken by Bhishma Dev. In the Mahabharata, his recorded instructions take up a huge, huge part. It must be, about 20% of the whole book, covering most of the Shanti Parva and the Anushasana Parva. And all instructions are there for how to live in this world. Especially he was teaching Yudhishthira about how people should live in this world. And after all that, Yudhishthira, well, especially how a king should rule, but then a king, he should be acquainted with all facets of dharma. So after that, after Yudhishthira had heard all of that, Yudhishthira asked Bhishma that, well, what's the best way to get liberated? Okay, how to live in this world is one thing, but how to get out of it? And then Bhishma taught him the holy names, and specifically Vishnu Sahasranama. In his boyhood, Bhishma was known as Devavrata. That name was not given to him at the beginning of life. It may be in Vedic culture that people's principal name changes. The name by which they're known to others changes. Even Srila Prabhupada, among his godbrothers, was known as Abhay Charanaravinda Prabhu, or in ordinary speaking, Abhayda, Brother Abhay. But after he was given the name Bhaktivedanta, And then Bhaktivedanta, then he took sannyas, so he became known as Bhaktivedanta Swami. And he was known by that name. Even so many years, he was known by other names. So today, there'll be initiation. And I request the devotees who are being initiated to use those, the name should be used, at least among the devotees. Otherwise, what's the point of giving it? If you still remain some Shanmugan or whatever. Shanmugan is a common name in Tamil Nadu. It means Shanmukha, six faces, six heads, Kartikeya. The Sri Vaishnavas don't have names like that. Shanmukhan, Sentil, these are common names. So don't keep that name. We're giving a name of Krishna Das. This is a spiritual name. Krishna Das, or maybe a name of Bhishma Das, a name of a devotee. In his childhood, in his babyhood, he was given the name Devavrata. He was the eighth son of Shantanu, who was a king in the Chandravamsa. You all know, at least I presume, that those who are raised as Hindus, those who are coming from the West, may not know. But in the history of what is now called India, there are two great... I didn't say it yet. There are two great ruling dynasties. Suryavamsa, in which Ram appears and so many great personalities appear. And Chandravamsa, in which Krishna appears. And so many great personalities also. So Shantanu was in the Chandravamsa. That's the line descended from the moon. In Japan also, the land of the rising sun, being the furthest east, that they also claim descent from the sun. So this Vedic culture was spread. The kings, they claim descent from the sun, which we can accept. Why not? So his father was Shantanu. And when we say a king, we don't mean just some lecher who happens to be called King so-and-so. We have, I guess it's not very politically correct to say it, but over at the edge of Europe, they have a new king coming up. But, you know, he's just another Malecha, that's all. Not just a king in name only. But these were real kings. They're Kshatriyas. They protected the citizens by their strength and their commitment and their determination. They were able to do so. They weren't nominal kings, constitutional monarchs, but they actually took charge of the kingdom. Much better system than this democracy, actually. If you have someone in charge who knows what he's doing and isn't out to exploit others, then he can rule. And otherwise, this democracy, it's just divide and rule, and all the time it's elections and calling the political enemies bad names, making alliances, breaking alliances. It's just a mess. Tremendous waste of time and energy. So anyway, Shantanu was a king. And his wife, from whom Devavrata was born, was Ganga Devi, who is Ganga River, is Ganga Devi, the personality, the goddess, people who are raised in the Western countries especially, raised in a mechanistic worldview or impersonal worldview, they think that the world is just running on by interaction of atoms in various ways. They've lost touch with the reality that everything is personal. The wind blows, the sun shines, the moon shines. There's summer and winter, there's day and night. It's all regulated by persons, and all the planets are persons, and all the rivers are persons, apart from their forms as rivers and hills and forests and planets. They have the personal form also. So Ganga is a very great personality. Here we have Kaveri also. The deity of Kaveri is there at the bank of the Kaveri River. So she exists in river form and in personal form also. Devavrata was a boy born as one of the Ashtavasus. Among the various demigods, there are eight who are known as Vasus, and he was the Vasu known as Dio. And his father, Shantanu, was the rebirth of another king who had already got liberated but who came back to earth. The king's name was Mahabhishek. As described in Mahabharata, Maharaj Mahabhishek, after death, went to Vishnu Loka. There's Vishnu Loka within this universe also. So he went there, but once he went to Brahma Loka, he went to visit Brahma on Brahma's planet. And in the assembly there, Ganga Devi was present also. And there was some, as there's a saying in English, there was some electricity between Mahabhishek and Ganga. Some attraction was there. Some wind blew her cloth so it became a little disheveled, and he noticed that, and she noticed him, and Brahma noted them. And you're not supposed to have any such feelings here. That's for way down on the earth. Okay, go to earth, both of you. He cursed them and sent them down. So Ganga begged for forgiveness. And Brahma said, okay, well, you have to go, but you can come back after a short time. And the he blessed her that she would come back, but the Ashtavasus would be born as her sons in the meantime. So she was born on earth with the name Ganga, same name Ganga, and she would wander in the forests on the bank of the Ganga. There probably aren't any forests on the bank of the Ganga now. Now, at that time, the king of the Chandravansha was named Prateep. He didn't have any children. What do you do if you don't have children? You get IVF, intravitreal fertilization. But the Vedic system is, you go to the holy place, like the bank of the Ganga, and perform tapasya. Ganga Devi saw him, and she was wandering on the bank of the Ganga, who she is, and she became attracted to him. So he's sitting there doing his meditation, and he feels something, some weight has come on his right thigh. She'd come and sat on his right thigh, and she expressed her desire to him, and he said, "You sat on the right thigh. That's meant for the daughter-in-law, not for, that's not meant for the wife. So, okay, you can be my daughter-in-law, but first of all, you have to wait for my son to be born." So in course of time, a son was born to him, Shantanu. And when Shantanu grew up, young man, he went hunting in the area close to the Ganga, and guess who he met there? He fell in love. It's been happening since the beginning of creation. And Ganga Devi agreed to marry him on the condition that you don't ever say anything to chastise me. Okay. Blind, love is blind. That should have set off something in his mind, right? What's going on here? But anyway, this is all Leela also. It's all the arrangement of Krishna's, all arranging for the appearance of Krishna and Bhishma. Now, to change the scene, as in a drama, Dio was one of the Ashtavasus, and his wife, she saw the cow of Vashishta, the famous cow that caused him trouble because people wanted to get it. So Dio went with the other seven Vasus and stole away the cow. Vashishta cursed them all to be born as mortals, as humans. They repented and begged pardon. And Vashishta said that, okay, you have to be born on earth, but I'll arrange that you can, after being born, you immediately come back. But this Dio, the one who actually stole the cow, he'll have to remain on earth for some time. But he'll be famous, he'll be powerful, he'll be a great personality, he'll be a great hero. So Ganga, she gave birth to her first child. Everyone in the palace, everyone in the kingdom was happy. She picked up the child, went to the bank of the Ganga, first son, threw in the Ganga. Very unexpected behavior. But Shantanu, he'd followed her up to the riverbank. Naturally, he was horrified. But he thought, oh, now he could get some idea why she had said he should not chastise her. Because if he chastises her, she will leave. That's it. That's the condition. Anytime you chastise me, I'm going. So it happened again. Second child born, thrown in the Ganga. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. When the eighth child was born, it was too much for Shantanu. He said, "What are you doing, you cruel woman? Why are you taking and throwing all your children in the Ganga?" And said, Ganga gave the child to him. Goodbye. And left him. She named, no, she didn't actually. She left the palace with the child, sorry. She named the child Devavrata and she brought him up in the forest. Vashishta and Ganga Devi, between them, they taught him everything that a Kshatriya would need to know, and a lot more also, because he became the authority on all branches of, well, especially on Raja Dharma, the science for kings, and on Niti, morality. He became the authority on Dharma, and ultimately of Paradharma, the highest dharma of Krishna consciousness. 32 years later, the king went in the same forest for hunting. He saw one royal-looking boy stopping the flow of the Ganga. So the king approached him, but he'd gone by the time. Then the king prayed to Ganga. He thought the Ganga had taken, the river Ganga, had taken the boy, but she appeared in person, gave the child to him, and then she vanished. And then the king Shantanu went back to the palace. So Devavrata was given the instituted as the Rajakumar, as the heir apparent for the throne. Shantanu again, another time, he often went there for hunting, to the bank of the Ganga. And he was hunting, and it's a beautiful scenery and the forest, and the gentle wind was blowing, and all of a sudden he felt this, he perceived this strong smell of musk in the air, and he wondered how is that possible. He followed the scent, and he came to the cottage of a fisherman. The fisherman had a daughter named Satyavati, and it was from her that this fragrance spread all around. Originally, her name was Kali. The fisherman had found her, the little tiny child, in the belly of a fish. She smelt like a fish. Even after being taken out of the belly throughout her life, for the beginning of her life, she smelt like a fish, and she was given the name Matsya Gandhi, fish smelling. So she used to assist the fisherman. He would, apart from fishing, he would also ferry people across the Ganga. One time, Parashara, the great saint Parashara, came to the Ganga, and for crossing, he got into the boat with that young fisher girl. And he noted that the time and the place come just perfect, astrologically. For, of course, in Mahabharata it says that he just fell in love with her, but there's more to it than that. So the time and the place were perfect for begetting an exceptional child. So Parashara proposed to her and said that, she said, how can I, and this and that. He said, don't worry, everything will be all right. I'll lose my virginity. It's all right, so he told her. So he begot a child in her womb, covering the boat with by his mystic power, by his yogic power. he covered the boat so he couldn't be seen from the banks, or with just like a mist, a shroud of mist. And then he inserted his semen into her womb, and she bore the child who became known as Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. And upon birth, he left home immediately and went for tapasya. He wasn't an ordinary child. He was self-sufficient from very birth. The whole episode remained a secret. Vyasa told his mother that, "If you ever need me, just call me. I'll come." By the grace of Parashara, Matsya Gandhi, her bodily smell changed to that of most attractive smell of musk. And she remained as if a virgin. So that's the story of the birth of Vyas. Now Shantanu has come to the cottage of the fisherman, and he's attracted by the smell of musk, and he's attracted by the beauty of the girl whose name has been changed to Satyavati. And you would think that a fisherman, when the king comes and asks for his hands of a daughter, he'd say yes. But he didn't. He had some conditions. One of which was that it should be Satyavati's son who should become the next king. So what could Shantanu do? Already Bhishma was crowned as or inaugurated as the heir apparent. And he couldn't just tell Bhishma that, forget it. So he went back to the palace. But he was in a depressed mood. He just locked himself in his room and wouldn't see anyone, and it was quite clear that he was deeply depressed and disturbed. Devavrata called all the ministers and asked them, "What's going on?" They told him that this is the situation. Your father wants to marry a fisherman's daughter, which is in itself is unusual, that a king should marry a fisherman's daughter. But he is not willing to give the daughter unless this condition is met. And obviously, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Devavrata is the one who stands in the way of his father's fulfilling his desire. So Devavrata found the fisherman's cottage on the bank of the Ganga and begged the fisherman, "Why, just come on, it's the king. The king asked for something, you should give it." He said, "Well, I have this condition." He said the same condition. And Devavrata said, "Okay. It's okay by me. Let my father marry your daughter, but I won't claim for my sons. My sons I won't take the kingship. Your grandson shall take the kingship." But then the fisherman said that, "Well, you see, what will happen is that you may not take the kingship, but your sons will dispute that with my grandson and with his sons." So at once, Devavrata pledged on the spot that Okay, I won't marry. I'll remain a bachelor for life. Okay. Took his word for it. The fisherman gave Satyavati to Devavrata. Devavrata took her to the palace, presented her to the father. And the king, when he came to know of what his son, Bhishma, had said, he was lying on his bed lamenting. He got up, embraced Devavrata in great happiness. The gods in the heavens showered flowers, and he was given the name Bhishma. Bhishma means terrible, because his vow was terrible. When you have all opportunities to be the king, you have the right to be the king in an undisputed kingdom with all the happiness and the prestige that arises from that, and completely selflessly you take the vow just to benefit someone else, his father. He took that vow. It's a terrible vow. In the eyes of materialistic people, it's a terrible vow to vow not to marry, and especially in such a situation where you have all opportunity for enjoyment. Otherwise, Bhishma is it's a typical Kshatriya name, terrible, one who's terrible, who's for a Kshatriya to be terrible to his foes is, that's good. Also the father of Rukmini, also called Bhishma, often referred to as Bhishmaka, little Bhishma, because he's not as big as that Bhishma, not as old as him. Bhima, pretty much the same meaning. One who's terrible in battle. Shantanu, being a dharmic king, was able to, he gave a benediction to his son, a boon to his son, Bhishma, that Bhishma can die whenever he likes. He can't be killed, but he will die whenever he likes. Satyavati had two sons. One was called Vichitravirya, and the next was called Chitrangada. Shantanu died shortly after the two sons were born. According to Satyavati's desire, Bhishma himself oversaw that Chitrangada was born as was given the kingdom. He became the king. But he was ruling well, but it didn't last very long, because once he met a Gandharva who asked him his name, and he said Chitrangada, and Gandharva said, well, that's my name. You can't have two of us with the same name. I'll kill you, and then there'll only be one of us. So they had a fight, and they had a battle, guess where? Kurukshetra. And they fought for 3 years, and then the Gandharva Chitrangada killed the king Chitrangada. And then Vichitravirya was crowned the king. Vichitravirya, despite his name, which could be translated as extraordinary prowess, but it was his name. He didn't have it so much. So he had to, Bhishma thought, better get him married quick, because we lost one king, and there's no heir in the line. We need to get some sons. So at that time, the Swayamvar of the three daughters of the king of Kashi. You may wonder, what's this all got to do with Bhishma? But it'll come in due course of time. Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. So Bhishma thought, okay, Vichitravirya should marry them. That'd be a good match. So Bhishma went himself to get them. He didn't send Vichitravirya, because Vichitravirya wouldn't have been able to take them. So Bhishma by this time was already quite an old man, and just seeing him, the girls became, I don't want to marry him. The other kings who were there, they knew, even though he's old, he's Bhishma. And if we have to fight with him, we're going to lose. So they tried to stop him from entering the palace, citing dharma. You see, you're an old man, and he said, well, I'm not going to marry them. But then on the basis of his deep knowledge of dharma, he established that it's quite acceptable for me to take these girls and give them to Vichitravirya. So he defeated all the kings who opposed him and took away the three daughters. I guess this wouldn't go down well with all the women's lib camp. They have no agency in deciding who they're going to marry. So he took them to Hastinapur, and preparations were going on for the marriage. Then Amba told Bhishma, actually, it's a Swayamvara, choosing my own husband, and I already decided I want to marry Shalva. So could you let me out of this? And Bhishma said, okay, all right. You can go, marry Shalva. So she went to her home, and the king of Kashi wouldn't take her. Already you're taken out of here, you don't come back. If you're married, you can come back, but not without me. So she went to Shalva, and Shalva said, no, you already went to someone else, and then you're stuck. That is the beginning of the end of Bhishma. It's a big story. Vichitravirya married Ambika and Ambalika. For 7 years he ruled, and then he died of consumption, a disease. There was no one to succeed him. There are two queens there. Satyavati approached Bhishma that you can, according to the system, Devarena Sutotpatim, to beget sons in the womb of a brother is allowed. So it's not exactly the same. If the brother has died or is incapable, not exactly the same. But Bhishma, he refused, because I took an oath. Life, we say bachelor in English, but the Sanskrit term is brahmacharya, which means more than not remaining, means a lot more than not being married. So you all know the story how Vyasadeva, he begot sons, and out of that came the Kauravas and the Pandavas. And Bhishma, he's there, he's in the background throughout the whole story of the Kauravas and the Pandavas. He is indebted to the Kauravas, in as much as the Pandavas, Pandu himself had gone to the forest with his wives, and so Bhishma thought it his duty to, as the elder member of the family, to oversee the family affairs at Hastinapur. But he became indebted, in as much as he was supported, maintained by Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And so he got in a fix. He fought on the wrong side in the battle of Kurukshetra. But that was also Krishna's arrangement, in as much as Bhishma got to see Krishna in that fighting mood, opposing him. And it was through Bhishma that Krishna proved to the world that his devotee is more to him than him, his very self. Naivatma chayata bhavan. Krishna said to Uddhava, you are more dear to me than my very self. So that was proved when Krishna himself got into the situation of dharma sankat. You know, the two rules of dharma are clashing and you can't follow. You have to go beyond. You have to transgress dharma. You can't do both. And Krishna himself told the story of the brahmana who never told a lie but who should have told a lie, because the Mahabharata is supposed to demonstrate the principles of dharma, but throughout the whole Mahabharata, again and again and again, we find situations where dharma sankat, the two principles of dharma, they cannot be followed, so you have to choose one of them. And you have to choose the better of two evils, which also shows the point that however much you want to be good, it's not possible in this world to avoid doing harm or doing bad at some point. That's the very nature of this world. That's why the brahmanas would traditionally do the five kinds of yajnas, and they have to free themselves from sins which are unavoidable. In burning wood in the fire, which is absolutely required for grihasthas and for brahmanas and for kshatriyas and vaishyas also, who are doing yajnas in the home every day. You have to burn wood. And in the wood there are going to be some tiny little bugs. You can't avoid killing them. When you take water from the well and strain it, they're going to be some tiny little creatures. You can't avoid. When you're walking on the road, you tread on some little creatures. You can't avoid. Even the Jain monks and sadhus and sadvis, they sweep the path so they won't step on any ants or insects. But in sweeping, they can also kill, in the very act of sweeping. More serious than that are things like, should you tell a lie to save a life? Even if you have made a vow not to tell a lie ever. And the story that Krishna told, yes, you should break your vow if necessary to save someone being murdered. There are all kinds of questions that come up. If someone is in philosophy, in ethics courses, when they teach, they teach things like this, that if there's some criminal who is young and healthy but he's a serious criminal, multi-murderer, serial killer, and you have there's another one who's a brilliant scientist doing medical research which can save thousands of lives, and you have three people who are very upright citizens who are doing great work of human society. Is it ethical to kill one? And then out of the three people, one needs a heart transplant, another needs a kidney transplant. Of course, if you take one kidney, you can leave the other. But a heart transplant. Anyway, is it okay to kill that man who's anyway a scourge on the earth, in order to keep the valuable person alive? So these are the kind of questions that come up in ethics. And this material world is so complex that it can be very hard to say. Kim karma, kim akarma iti, kaviyohi apimoi. No, what is that? Akarma. Akarma na. Bodhavyam apikarmana. Vikarmana cha vibodhaya. Akarmanas cha bodhavya. Gahano karmano gatihi. What is correct action? What is incorrect action? Which is detached spiritual action? The considerations of karma are so deep that it can be very difficult even for very learned persons to understand. So if you go to ask advice, you can ask advice in some matter from learned people. They may give different advice on the same matter, because you can't tell what will happen in future. What will be the you can't predict the consequences. To some extent you can predict the consequences, but you can't fully predict the consequences of any action. But still, we have Mahabharata, we have Ramayana, we have Puranas, we have Shastra that give some idea of previous, and in the courts, it used to be the village courts or the courts in the royal palace, and then in the British courts on matters of law, the wakils, the advocates, they would quote from Shastra. I told you that, right? And I saw some extracts from a legal digest from the early part of the 20th century in Madras High Court over some matter. Is it in the matter of heir? What do you call that? The will. What do you call that? The heritage. Is it suitable? The money has been left to someone else, but the son claims, I need some money from my father, because as a brahmana, I need money to offset the wedding expenses. And then the two lawyers say, one of them says, no, you don't need it. The other one says, you do need it. And they're both quoting from Shastra in the British law court, British system law court. Previous instances, well, there's prescriptive and descriptive, and they're both accepted as evidence. Although some of our contemporaries say that descriptive, it's just fairy story from the past. Descriptive doesn't have any legal value, but at least in the Vedic system, descriptive also has value. So Mahabharata is full of these kind of situations. Bhishma himself, the great authority on dharma, when Draupadi in the Asat Sabha, she was dragged in there by Dushasana, another good Kshatriya name, hard to control. So it's a good name for Kshatriya. He's not good, but the name is good for a Kshatriya. So she appealed to all the venerable people present. Is this dharma that I, the daughter of a pious king and the wife of pious husbands, am dragged like this into the assembly of all these, of all you respectable people? She's in the period of the month when she wouldn't come in public in any sense, and then she's dragged by her hair most insultingly. And it's a difficult situation from the legal point of view, because legally the husbands are now the slaves of Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, legally, and then the wife should also be. So I said, but who's going to say, yes, yes, it's according to Dharma, you can be dragged into the assembly. So Bhishma, when he was asked, and he was expected, he could give the proper judgment. He said, Dharma is very subtle, it's very difficult to understand. Vidura spoke out. And who else? Vikarna. Somehow he was among all the brothers of Duryodhana. He was one who, he knew that Duryodhana was wrong. But again, it's Dharma. You have to follow your elder brother. You have to do what he says. You have to support him. So Bhishma, he was killed ultimately by who? Who killed him?
Appa.
Maybe I say in Tamil, different word, by Shikhandi. But he would never admit that. Arjuna killed me. He wouldn't admit Shikhandi killed him. And that's another whole story. Amba then, out of frustration and anger. Oh, we have to be very careful. At the end of life, one has to give up all anger and ask for forgiveness also from everyone who you may have offended. Definitely we offend people. It's the same thing. We can't avoid committing some sin or causing harm to others, even if we don't want to, even inadvertently we will. And similarly, we may offend people, even though we don't mean to. We can be misunderstood or misrepresented or misinterpreted. It happened even to Rupa Goswami, that is mentioned in Bhakti Ratnakara. He was misunderstood to be insulting a Vaishnava, as a result of which his meditation on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna became broken. So this world is like that. Misunderstandings take place. So at the time of death, we should, or just when we're about to die, if we have that much time to think, because you don't know, at any time it can happen without any warning. But we should ask for forgiveness from others for any offenses caused knowingly or unknowingly, because it will carry on to another life. And Amba deliberately did that. She was so angry. That's another thing. It's best not to, even if we are wronged, it's best not to carry grudges, because that grudge will carry on into another life. Just like sometimes, it's also the nature of this world that people do things to us which are very bad, and we can't understand why are they behaving like this to me. And then we can understand, I must have done something to them in a previous life. Otherwise, I can't understand why they're doing this now. So Amba, she thought that Bhishma has ruined my life. I'm the daughter of a king. I was about to be married to a pious king, and he came and just spoiled it all. And I can't marry anyone now. No one will take me now. So she performed tapasya with the express intent of killing Bhishma. Being born again in a situation where she can kill Bhishma. So she was born as a she, but she was raised as a he. And when she was married, it was discovered she was a she. So she went to the forest and met a yaksha who gave her his manhood. So he became a he. And the transgender people in ISKCON cite this. But from Bhishma's point of view, she was a she. So when he, or they, I guess you should say they, right? Preferred pronouns. When they came to fight, Bhishma would not counter her. He said, I'm not gonna fight against a woman. No, he's a man. He's a woman. They is a woman. They are a woman. So in this way, Shikhandi had free aim at him, and Arjuna also came, because Bhishma himself said that even before the battle, he told Duryodhana, you can all go home if you like, I can defeat everyone all by myself. which was why Duryodhana became angry, politely angry, and said, you're not fighting to the full. You have too much affection for the Pandavas. You're just making a show of fighting. So then Bhishma said that, yeah, okay, tomorrow I'll kill them all. You wait and see. Krishna came to know of this. There are spies in the camp. Spying, it's also part of politics and diplomacy. So there were five arrows meant for killing the five Pandavas. So Krishna came to Duryodhana, who was keeping the arrows. Bhishma said, give me those arrows. These arrows are marked with the Shakti for killing each one. Duryodhana came and said, oh, Krishna, you came. Do you want anything? Anything I can do for you? I'll give you the whole kingdom if you want. He said, no, just give me those five arrows. Then Bhishma became more, and you know the story, he fought so fiercely that Krishna himself was caught in the Dharma Sankat, because Krishna had promised, I won't fight, I'll be in the battle, but I won't fight. You can take me or you can take my army, he said to Arjuna and Duryodhana. So Duryodhana was very happy to get the army. If it had been Krishna fighting, he would have taken Krishna fighting. But Krishna not fighting, he said, well, take the army. Great. And Arjuna thought, great, I got Krishna. So Krishna had given a vow that he won't fight. But he also gave a vow, Kaunte a pratijani. You go and tell them. Because I'm from Mathura, Vishwanath Chakravarti knows. I'm from Mathura, and you can't trust those people from Mathura. They're always telling lies. It's a long tradition. Name bhakta pranashati. My devotee will not be destroyed. So, it would look... bhaktosi me sakapri... Chaiti, you're my friend, you're my very friend, Arjuna, and my devotee. So it wouldn't look very good if just a few days after speaking Bhagavad Gita, and that's supposed to be the standard for spiritual knowledge for all generations to come, and Bhishma kills Arjuna, and Arjuna's lying there dying, and Krishna says, well, you know, I promised not to fight, right? So sorry. So Krishna had to fight. He broke his vow. He broke one vow, not to fight, but he didn't break the other vow, to protect his devotees. So Bhishma, such a great devotee, he made Krishna break his promise to protect his devotees. He would have killed Arjuna. So then, who killed Bhishma then? Who was it? No one can kill him. His father said that you won't die unless you want to. So there he is. He's lying, they took him to the edge of the battlefield, and he's waiting for Uttarayana. In the meantime, the battle is over, and Krishna, Yudhishthira, the Pandavas come, and he speaks. And it must have taken quite some time to speak all that, all those instructions, Shanti Parva, Anushasana Parva, because we're now, how many days after Uttara? 8 days. 8 days after Uttara. And then he left out of his own accord and attained his position again as one of the Vasus. And there's much, much more to say, but there's not really enough time to speak the whole Mahabharata now. Nor do I know it all. But some of you can teach the boys in the Gurukul. Let them learn this. Actually, every learned person should know Mahabharata. There's real meaning of learning. You see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj quotes from so many sources. And it's just like we find Gopinath Acharya, that came up in the drama last night. Gopinath Acharya says to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that when Bhattacharya, he's asking, what is the Shastra Praman for this Chaitanya? Krishna Chaitanya, what's the Praman for him being Bhagavan? And Gopinath Acharya says, come on, you know Shastra. You know Mahabharata, you know Srimad Bhagavatam, it's right there. You tell me, Gopinath Acharya said. So it's just expected. And if we see the commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, Srimad Bhagavatam, many times they'll just say, Yata, something or other. And you just expect, Yata, Deepa de Halinyai. And you're supposed to know what it means. You're supposed to know all these things. It's just expected that you'll know all these things. So teach them. And Bhishma Mahajana, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. Let them hear the stories of the great personalities. This is their inspiration, not some politician or some mundane history. Let them hear about the perfect persons. These are the persons to mold their lives upon, to emulate. I'll finish here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Bhishma Dev. Today there's initiation. So take blessings from Bhishma Dev on this auspicious day. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha dante nitaya churnakam padayane patya kritvacha kakushatam etad aham bravimi hei sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad goranga chandra charane kurutanu raga Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukaro ravayang vichariyama hari rasamadirama dati mata bhuvi vilutama natama nirvishama Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So everyone please take prasad, except those who are to be initiated today. Hare Krishna.